I was excited to see that video last week or week and a half ago. It's actually very emotional for me that Facebook put out, right? They're committing, you know, they're committing to work from home, and they understand that people should be where they're inspired.
Are you new to working from home? Maybe you're figuring out how to manage a distributed team. Are you homeschooling your kids while trying to get something, anything else done? You've come to the right place. Work Life at Home talks with both newbies and experts as we explore the tools, tips, and techniques that will help you make the most of this new way of working. I'm Josh Freeman. Welcome home. My guest today is a man with a list of social media and digital content successes so long it would probably take the rest of this podcast to review them all. Seth Silver was mentored right out of college by the 14-time Emmy Award-winning television branding expert John Ridgway at Novacom, and he quickly rose to become their associate creative director, overseeing teams in North America and Asia. Since then, he's helped run several digital creative agencies and worked with some of the most visible and successful brands in the world, including Red Bull, Hasbro, PepsiCo, Hyundai, Fox, and Disney. In 2009, he founded and became executive creative director of Social Control, his current agency. They create social content and digital branding for companies like Dole, PepsiCo, Career Builder, and Western Union. And they work with major ad agencies, including McCann, Whedon & Kennedy, Ogilvy, Razorfish, Gray, and many others. The brands he's helped include AT&T, Coca-Cola, Honda, Google, Shell, Reebok, Wendy's, Panera, Ford, and Cisco. And now, he's also formed Seth Silver Consulting to work on a broader, more integrated basis with clients. A couple of years ago, he decided to go all in with a remote workforce. Social Control now has what Seth refers to as a digital hub rather than a conventional office space, and the entire organization is set up to work from home. Seth Silver, welcome to Work Life at Home.
Hey, Josh. Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
So to set the stage, maybe before 2018, why don't we talk about how you were set up at that point? So how were things working before you decided to go all remote?
Yeah, absolutely. So prior to the end of 2018, I actually had at various different times three brick and mortar kind of creative studios throughout Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. So the latest one was in Westlake Village to service Dole packaged foods. Prior to that, I had a studio in Hollywood, and then prior to that, in Los Feliz. So everything was set up where we all creatives, you know, were working, you know, in-house at my facilities. And we would handle everything, you know, from a creative production standpoint in-house. So we also set up to have photo shoots there. So we always had a studio space. But yeah, things have definitely changed since then. Now that we've kind of built out this more virtual model, essentially what we did is we set up a virtual hub in downtown LA. Mm-hmm. And we utilize that for critical team meetings, for client meetings. And then rather than having our own studio for photo shoots, we actually rent studios throughout Los Angeles. Or obviously, given the pandemic, we shoot from home.
Right.
Given the current situation, yeah.
So in 2018, when you made this switch, kind of what prompted it? What made you think this was a good idea?
Part of what prompted it was also, I think, as you alluded in the introduction, was my desire to expand and work with clients and being able to leverage my, you know, almost 20 years of experience versus just, you know, Social Control, which is really highly focused and specialized in social media content creation. So there was some changes there, obviously. And I really wish I actually would have adopted a kind of a virtual model sooner. I personally, and this is just my experience, I found the, you know, office environment to be extremely distracting. I was trying to think back before this podcast, I was trying to think back how long I've had like my own in-home office. And so I've had my own office at home for over 8 years, actually.
Oh, okay.
Now that doesn't mean I've been working remotely, you know, for 8 years, but exclusively, but I always found it challenging for, you know, to get the type of certain types of work done right in the office. This is constant distraction. Mm-hmm. So basically what I would do is I would come into the office as needed for photo shoots. I would always be on set to work and direct the team. Or let's say I was working with one of my designers and, you know, there was a particular look and feel that we weren't kind of nailing. I would, you know, come in, sit down with them, direct them, and so forth. But I always worked, for the past 8 years, I've always had a home office that I worked from.
You know, it's funny because I had the same experience when I had a physical office of being it was just impossible to do any actual work. It was always somebody kind of tugging at my sleeve when I'd walk in the door, and it wouldn't stop until I left. And I'm wondering how the employees have responded to the switch. You know, are they happier? Are they, you know, do they miss it? How is that all working?
From my understanding, I mean, everybody was very happy working from home.
Yeah.
I think they enjoyed it a lot more. We are much more efficient. Mm-hmm. These folks are all working from home or in normal situations for meeting at our virtual hub in downtown Los Angeles. We're not really doing any real work there other than, you know, congregating, you know, building camaraderie, or, you know, doing brainstorm sessions, you know, kickoff meetings with clients, things of that nature.
And how are you managing these teams? How do you manage them online? I assume you manage them online. And what are you using from the standpoint of systems and being able to run the company, you know, with some level of efficiency and clarity?
So prior to going virtual, we actually started moving away from like Dropbox, right? Mm-hmm. And we started moved everything to Google Drive. So now the whole company is run off of Google essentially, which is highly efficient. And that's from a production standpoint. So we basically have built a workflow where we have, I mean, to get granular with it, we use it as a file management tool. We have project folders that are set up with various different stages of the project. Designers, you know, are able to upload their files straight to Google Drive. It's all, you know, completely integrated with the folks that are working on the projects. In regards to our communication, we use Google Meets, or, you know, now it's called Google Meets, but it's, you know, Google Hangouts. And we've been using that for a long time. And so that's extremely efficient. And yeah, so that's the workflow. And it's we basically took, you know, we always had like a creative production workflow, kind of a systematic structure of how folder structure and so forth, where files go. And that just ended up getting, you know, ported over to Google, and it's worked out extremely well for us. Even in regards to client communication and client management, it's all done via Google. I mean, so if we're, because social control, as I alluded to, is really focused on social media content creation, social media management. So a lot of what we're doing there is managing clients' entire social media presence and, you know, creating content for all of their platforms. And so we're managing their editorial calendar done on Google. I mean, it's a Google spreadsheet.
Is it?
Google spreadsheet. Okay. A client. It has tabs. I mean, the client gets to, you know, make comments on there. They get a direct link to it. Each client's a little bit different. But it's all done on, it's either a Google spreadsheet or a Google slide, actually. So for a lot of the planning, So it happens depending on the client and the level of engagement that there's a whole process, which is like an ideation process of actually, you know, coming up with concepts for the content that we're going to deploy. And that all happens like within a Google slide, you know, Google slide document. And it's essentially made up of like, you know, mood boards and anything that we can do to convey the idea of a particular piece of content that we're going to create.
So for people who aren't familiar with this, which is, I don't know what percentage of my audience has worked with Google stuff or not, but Google Slides is essentially PowerPoint hosted in the cloud, right? That's the gist of it, is it makes presentations, right? Is that correct?
Yeah, exactly. So, I know that Microsoft has, like, you know, it's obviously a, you know, number one competitor, one of the leading competitors, and they have similar software, but it's essentially PowerPoint within the cloud. It's funny because we did some consulting work with Google a few years ago, and it was actually consulting for some of their IT work, like their B2B kind of IT work. And like, there's this huge misconception, especially for large companies. So the project that we were working on was geared towards essentially the target was IT executives, right? And they want to transition these senior IT executives to Google versus, you know, Microsoft. But there's a lot of misconception about security. And I won't get into that. I'm not, you know what I mean? But basically the key takeaway there is just, it's just as secure. You just need to, you know what I mean? It's just as secure as Microsoft, and all the options and tools to make it secure are already pre-built in. But, it's a phenomenal tool. I mean, we use our Google for our email as well. Mm-hmm. So on both of my businesses, so with Social Control and also with Seth Silver Consulting, all of my emails run through Google.
Mm-hmm. Mine too, by the way.
Exactly. Uh-huh. Yeah. So you can set up, you know how to do that then. Yeah. You could set up your domain through there.
Right.
It's a phenomenal tool. And you know, it's actually really affordable. I mean, it's all mm-hmm. very affordable. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, I would say that it's our lifeline in regards to, communication. I mean, there's been other tools to, for large scale projects. I mean, it just depends on the type of work that we're doing. Right.
Right.
And this is even, you know, predating like, you know, work from home. I mean, we've used tools like Asana, mm-hmm. Slack, of course.
Right.
Right.
Where I was going to go is have you abandoned all those tools, or are you using them in conjunction with Google?
Yeah, we just don't have a need for that type of stuff anymore because we're not, you know, actively kind of, and I hate to say micromanaging, but we're not like task managing people. When we move towards a virtual model, we move towards a model working with much more senior talent.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So they manage themselves.
Exactly.
Basically.
We don't have a need to like assign tasks. And when we do it. It's just, you know, like we have a web developer that works on a lot of our web stuff, and we're just in constant communication, you know what I mean? Over email or on the phone.
So there's no master tracking like a equivalent of Basecamp or Asana or any of those.
No, I mean, there has been times in that particular scenario with our web developer that if there's a laundry list of changes, we'll, you know, put those into a Google spreadsheet and he'll just kind of go down the list.
Mm-hmm.
But there's not that kind of ongoing, we just don't have a need for that type of management of resources.
Gotcha.
But I could say that for other types of teams who do have a need, I think those types of tools are highly effective.
Right. Yeah. I mean, we use Basecamp and it works really well.
Love Basecamp. we used to use that significantly also.
Have you ever have you read Jason Fried's book Remote?
No, I have a copy of it though.
Oh, it's great. It's amazing. It's this whole, you know, it's basically what you are a proponent of, which is this whole remote working concept. And he's, you know, Basecamp's entire company is set up that way. And it's a really interesting kind of point of view on how they work, how they set it up, what their philosophy is, and how it applies to other companies, including large companies. And, you know, he's kind of straight up about it doesn't work for everybody. It doesn't work for every situation, but in general, it's a great way to work. And sort of, this is how you can do it. It's a good book.
Yeah. It's funny. I just grabbed it and it's in my hand right here. Cause I actually bought this just a few weeks ago.
Oh,
but I'm not on it yet. I am currently reading a book about leading from the future, which I kind of just seemed highly relevant for given the current situation. Yeah, but yeah, I'm excited to jump into this book. I agree with that statement too. I think that while you know, remote working, it's highly efficient, right? There's just certain situations where you're going to want to have that physical communication. I think it can be, you know, through all the technological advances now with Zoom and Google Meets and Teams, there's just so much that you can do without physically being together. But there's no, when it comes to business, I don't think that there's like one operational structure that's going to work for every type of business, you know,
right,
like
sure.
A lot of like marketing services companies that I've been talking to, there are some concerns with, you know, some with a remote business model, and they're valid concerns. And there's also different types of resources that are more inclined to work remotely. Like I know a very large holding company who has a significant portion. Well, I was told all of them, I don't know if that's correct or not, but the entire recruiting team has always worked remotely. So I think there's different types of resources given certain types of businesses that, you know, it's a lot easier for them to work remotely.
I would think. Yeah. I mean, if your job is primarily phone calls and computer research, you know, online research, which I assume is mostly what recruiters are doing, you know, working remotely makes total sense. What do you need an office to do that for? You can do that from anywhere, from your phone if you need to, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah. So you're advocating, I guess, I don't know if I could characterize it that way, but you're an enthusiastic proponent of the idea of agencies switching to this model. And I'm wondering, you know, if you want to talk about that a little bit as a general model for the future of advertising.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd love to. So there's a lot of changes that have happened, right? It's not just the pandemic. There's a lot of changes that have happened in advertising, right? Radical shifts in the business. And part of that is the fact that marketing services have essentially, unfortunately, over the past several years, just become commoditized. Brands, organizations are bringing, you know, agency services in-house. Budgets are being slashed completely. And agencies are, I know of many who are having a really hard time adapting to that. So part of working, you know, being able to work remotely is also being able to adapt to the future. It's, and what I mean by that is obviously, it's funny, there was a video that I put out about this on LinkedIn, and I was telling agencies, sell all your real estate, you know, set up a virtual hub. And the concept behind that is that in order to adapt to the current landscape, they need to find efficiencies in workflow. You need to find ways to deliver the same quality of services that they're doing at a fraction of the cost.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the ways to do that is to obviously sell off their real estate and then reinvest that money back into the company. And my vision of this is reinvesting that back into their own intellectual property in allowing a marketing services business to transcend the marketing services business model. And you might ask, like, well, why would they want to do that? Well, problem with marketing services is not only has it been commoditized, but it's also a hamster wheel, right? There's, you know, you can look at, you know, the news on Ad Age and Ad Week, and it's this constant like winning of business, losing of business, staffing up, staffing down. It's all based on human capital. Agencies are constantly letting people go when they lose business and then rehiring people when they win business. And that's, you know, that's very challenging, right? So working remotely allows them to drastically bring the cost down, operational costs, to adapt to the new environment. And then also with this idea of reinvesting profits from real estate back into their business to develop their own intellectual property also allows them to transcend the marketing services model. So eventually they can get to a point where there's a majority percentage of their business that's based off on intellectual property versus services, right? Service-based businesses, I mean, it's a known fact. There's not, yeah, I hate to say there's none because it wouldn't be a true statement, but there's a reason why the majority of service-based business are not, you know, don't have billion-dollar valuation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because they don't have a thing. Everything is right. Based on people. And I mean, even very high-level law firms that charge, you know, $1,500 an hour for their attorneys, it's still that guy, right? Ultimately, it's the skill of an individual person. And if that person, I don't know, leaves or dies or decides not to be a lawyer anymore, that just goes out the window and there is no fixed value there. There's no thing that transcends the people or lives outside the skill level of the people. And unlike, you know, let's say, I don't know, Google, maybe it's a terrible example, but you know,
they have a thing, right?
And if somebody leaves Google, Google's value stays because the value is in the thing they built.
It's in the intellectual property. Exactly. Mm-hmm. So that's why Facebook, Instagram, yeah, you know, all these social platforms are such large companies. Mm-hmm. Right. And so, but yeah, it makes for a much more efficient workflow, I think, for marketing services firms. Some of the rebuttal to that I've gotten from business leaders, and I do have some solutions for it though, but one of them is junior talent. So I think it's important to understand that, because I'll be honest, initially, you know, I wasn't really thinking about that because I'm not working with a lot of junior talent these mm-hmm. days. I work mm-hmm. with, you know, very experienced professionals. And so I'm not doing a lot of training of kind of, you know, entry level talent, but the majority of agencies are. And so that, the question that was brought up was, well, how do we deal with that? How do we deal with if we don't have a physical location, how do we deal with that? I said, well, there's a few different ways that they can deal with that. One is they can do on-site at the virtual hub if they feel that to be necessary in order to train those folks.
Mm-hmm.
So that's an option there. But then there's actually a tool that has come to market. It's called Trainual. And that's essentially what it does. So it's all online. So just as we were talking about Google, now you've got a system where you can basically put all of your operational training and structure in there. And so anything that a particular, you know, employee would need to learn, they can learn it within this system. And so that solves that issue. And then the other one that I was getting was culture, right? They were like, well, how do we, and so I think people are going to the extremes, right? So it's like, listen, obviously during a pandemic, that's very challenging for people to meet up, and you know, there's some health concerns there, right? But in normal situations, there's no reason why they can't have, you know, a monthly, you know, employee meetup at the virtual hub. Or I think personally it will build culture better because they'll be forced to to come up with specific ways to build camaraderie with the team, right?
Right.
Different activities or retreats or things of that nature.
And culture is not just building camaraderie. Culture is also building kind of an ethic and kind of a work style and a way of communicating. And there's a lot of elements to building a culture. And a lot of those things can happen online, I think. At least that's what we did. We have a culture, but it's basically consists of the sum total of how we all interact with each other. And yeah, we get together occasionally and see that, you know, when we can, we have the team build some sense of teamness, I guess. But, you know, a lot of the time that happens in phone calls and screen sharing and Zoom calls and all kinds of ways. And people kind of seem to get it. It's worked. I assume you can do it that way as well.
Yeah, no, I agree 100%. And there's actually studies too. I mean, if you look at, there's some studies out there about remote, work from home, remote working, and the fact that the employee retention is much longer. Employees are actually happier.
Yeah.
There's all different ways, that culture is made up throughout an organization.
I'm guessing one of the big issues for that would be mentoring. But that is a little difficult to do online, I suppose, because you don't have as much contact and it's not like you can look over the shoulder at somebody as they do whatever they do. And when you think of, I don't know, imagine whether John Ridgway could have mentored you in a remote working environment. How would that have worked? What do you think?
Yeah, that you're right. That's an interesting one there. I don't know if it would. I mean, no, I don't think I would have got it's definitely possible. Okay. Like, Zoom screen shares, it's absolutely possible, but right. There's nothing that really beats, I think, that physical connection. And that's what that's what humanity's about. Right. I mean, building that connection. And then I think it would have been challenging.
I think it takes intention. That's the thing. It's like if your goal as a mentor is to mentor somebody, I think you can find a way to do it because anyway, we have to in this environment, we have to right now. But, even in the long run, I think when I think of my own mentors, I had some physical connection with them and contact with them. But a lot of stuff was phone calls and, checking in occasionally, maybe having a drink with them or something. But I don't have the model that you had of actually working closely with somebody side by side for a long period of time. But I do have mentors, and the mentors are people that I kind of reached out to and asked about stuff. And then they would advise me and help me and made a suggestion and connect me to somebody, whatever. So I think there's an element of mentoring that works okay this way. And it's not maybe the ideal way, but I think it can be achieved.
Yeah, I agree. And it depends, and it's all, I think, scenario specific. Like in my particular situation where when you ask that question, I'm, automatically flashing back to me and John sitting down on a table discussing the difference between, configuration and treatment when it comes to brand identity. So it's right. Cause he was a traditionalist in that sense, right? We would never move towards a treatment phase, meaning color, until we knew that the identities that we were building worked in black and white. Mm-hmm. Right. So you're kind of thinking about that and how would you do that online? Yeah, it's possible. So I think it depends on the situation, right? And what you're being mentored on. And especially now, everything's accessible, right? Masterclass. I mean, you can get mentored by some of the most famous people in the world without knowing them, without having that direct tie to them. You can just sign up for Masterclass.
And of course, great university classes. There's lots and lots of ways of getting, if you want to participate, there's ways of getting the information and of learning. There's no question about it. And lots and lots of opportunity, lots of input that you can get. There's so much available now. And it's different. I think it's just different. You couldn't, back when you were mentored, and certainly back when I was mentored, that just wasn't available. That wasn't a thing you could go out and do. You had to sign up for some, you get into university or you had to do something major to get access to information. And now you can just decide you want to learn something and you can go learn it in 5 minutes on YouTube or whatever, you know,
right.
It's totally different.
Absolutely.
I want to ask you about a different aspect of your business. And I'm not sure how this works remotely, but it's the idea of pitching. And a couple of things. One is how you, when you need to do a pitch, and I don't know if you do pitches that involve speculative approaches or speculative work, but if you do, how you engage a team to do that. And then the other thing is, how do you contact clients when it's all remote? And, you know, how is that all manifesting itself in a remote environment?
So, yeah, so we do pitching. And again, it's all driven by technology. I mean, we're using Zoom, we're whatever the client out, you know, in a client service-based business, whatever the client prefers. So, right, if it's Zoom or if it's Google or if it's, you know, Microsoft Meets, whatever it is. But those are the tools that we're using. We were just, you know, just last week I was, you know, pitching a new client and we made a presentation with them and it was all done on Zoom. And it was highly effective. So, I mean, I think that's, it's interesting. One, for me, it's all, I can understand how the audience, like some of these things are, if they're not working virtually or remotely, it can, you know, sound problematic or seem challenging, but in my eyes, this stuff is just ingrained in my DNA, right? It's like, it's just like eating. It's like, what do you mean? How do you pitch a client? Just go on Zoom, you know, invite them to a meeting online. And now you guys are sitting face to face, you know, in front of your computer.
Right. So you can switch to screen sharing or you can.
Exactly. Yeah. And as far as how the team goes, right. So I learned, you know, very early on in my career, how to, this idea that I mentioned of expanding and contracting with the business is, it's not a new idea. It's actually an idea I learned 20 years ago. Right. So engaging with, you know, creatives, for me, that's not a problem at all. I mean, I've got a roster of kind of multidisciplinary creatives that I work with on various different projects. And, you know, we just completely work, you know, virtually. There will be times where we've met up. So, you know, we'll meet up for coffee. We'll meet up to talk about a particular project, wherever it's convenient for the resource and myself. Right. Most of the time, like, well, we're working just as like we're talking right now. And then we're working together in this kind, in this capacity. And then, you know, I'm getting designs back from the designer or I'm getting a script from the writer, whatever it may be for that particular project. And we're assembling into a presentation and, or those resources actually have, access. So as I mentioned, us leveraging Google Slides, all of our presentations are done now in Google Slides. We actually moved away from InDesign, right? So we used to do all of our presentations in InDesign, and that was obviously very challenging to collaborate because you physically have to be there. It's just, if you know anything about InDesign, it's, right? So everything is done in the cloud when you're using Google Slides. Everybody can participate in the document. If there's a typo, somebody can change it. You know, you don't have to go back to the person to ask them to change, you know, change the file.
Right.
And it's, so it's the same way in regards to when we're pitching clients. So if I'm working with one of my designers, I'm giving them access to the Google Slides document. They know exactly where they should put their comps or their creative work, whatever that may be for that assignment. And it works out really well.
That's interesting. There's a lot of conversation about the gig economy and its benefits for people, obviously, and then its problems for people. And one of the problems is things like health insurance, sort of continuity, the idea that you have to continue to develop your own client base and your own business. And it's hard for people. It's hard for people who haven't done it before, for sure. And it's, you know, it's quite a lot of work to be an entrepreneurial person selling your own freelance services or consulting services. And I'm curious about sort of how you see that whole thing from the point of view of the end client, I guess, not your clients, but as the client for these people, and the difference between that and the sort of security and stability of an employee base that's hired and on salary.
Yeah, absolutely. So what's interesting is, you know, over the past week, you've seen things like from Facebook committing to 50% of their workforce going remote over the next 10 years, right? You're hearing news from Twitter and other companies about, you know, people working remote indefinitely. Mm-hmm. So I think there's going to be a major shift towards working from home. That's going to present some unique opportunities. There's a lot of challenges with even like these companies like Google and so forth, you know, having these, you know, huge facilities in like San Francisco, it's just incredibly expensive.
Yeah.
You know, people are just working to live, and you have a job at Google, right? The, mm-hmm. you know, fantastic company with, in fact, you know, fantastic probably healthcare and benefits package, but you know, you could barely get into an apartment because it's just so astronomically expensive. So there's going to be, as I think what's going to happen is as big business moves towards a majority remote working model, we're going to see a lot of people move from cities into suburbs, which is going to lower their cost of living, right? And and hopefully they'll be happier, right? Because they're going to be able, you know, they won't have such high expenses, and then they'll have a stable, right, stable job. So I think there's huge opportunity there. And I'm really excited to see that. I also, on the contrasting side, like you're saying, there are challenges, right? As being an independent, your own healthcare. And I think over time, you need to figure out what works for you. I'm not, you know, this isn't an endorsement in any way, shape, or form, but I moved towards Kaiser, much more affordable, right, than other types of healthcare, right? I don't endorse them. I'm not saying anything, you know, but that's just for me, right?
Right.
It's a lot, right? And so to each its own in that regard, right? You have to figure out what works for you. You're right. It is challenging as an independent in this gig economy. You have to consistently be, you know, putting yourself out there. But now's the time. I mean, there's so many different, you know, tools to do that. You know, there's you know, Behance, there's just so many, you know, there's working, not working. There's all of these different,
And there's general social media also creating a presence and an awareness of you on I know lots of designers who are using Instagram that way. And it's just a thing of staying visible and, you know, staying interesting and developing a following. And so you sort of, it's like, I guess it's like any form of marketing. It's just a different tool. But the idea that you need to put a consistent message out there and be visible is just part of being, you know, of earning a living, I guess, at this point. And especially if you're going to be a gig worker, you have to be able to do it.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I have a good friend of mine. His wife is a very successful illustrator, and she has a very large following on Instagram. And that's, she gets all of her business from Instagram.
Yeah.
Right. Which is interesting because it's the complete opposite for me, right? Since I'm a creative consultant I'm running a boutique creative firm. It's a bit different, right? I'm not, you know, I'm not positioning myself as a designer or an illustrator, right? So I have different methods of, you know, client acquisition that I use, which are complete opposite of what she would use. So again, it's like, there's not one solution for every, you know, every person in every profession. But one of the things that is really interesting that I do want to touch on is now, though, given the current landscape and the acceleration of moving to work from home, what's going to happen, I believe, is there's also going to be essentially now brands have access, right? They have, and I've always felt like I've had this access because I'm familiar with working this way, but you can access anybody in the world. I mean, right there. And a lot of the times you know, the particular talent they are looking for may not be located in, you know, New York City, or may not be located in LA, or they may not even be in the United States.
Right.
Right. And so now you have this idea of like, kind of engaging folks, you know, outside the US. There's pros and cons to all of that, but there's different costs of livings there too. I know, for example, like Social Control at one point had several partners, particularly in the development space, because we used to develop a lot of social media applications. And while we did have in-house, we also leveraged some strategic partners. Particularly, we had a partner that was based out of the UK. We also had a partner that was based out of Canada. We had a partner at one point based out of Eastern Europe.
And it's not hard.
No.
That's the thing that's changing. It's not hard to do that. So the problem we're going to have as a country, I assume, is that we are an expensive place to live. And even though there's a lot of opportunity here, we need to earn a lot of money in order to survive. And if we're in a global economy and people are using resources that are from everywhere, we're going to, you know, as a society, we're going to either need to up our value to the point where we're worth the money that we need to charge, or we're going to be in a lot of trouble. And I don't know where that's all going to go in the long run, but it feels extremely global right now, and especially during the pandemic.
Yeah, I think things are going to move, accelerate to that level. I think also as big business, what's going to happen is as big business moves towards a majority remote working model, the pace of change is going to accelerate exponentially, right? Because all of these things that we talked about, it's to, like I said, to me, they're just very like ingrained in my DNA. To others, they're foreign. But what's going to happen is these tools, right? Technology has essentially created mass efficiency. And so the more that the big business moves towards remote working model, the more efficient they're going to be. And that efficiency is going to drive probably the most change that we've seen, you know, in a very long time. And so I think we're going to have a period of, as we move towards work from home, we're going to see some real heavy radical changes in the advancement of business and technology. And it's going to be exciting. It's exciting.
It is.
I mean, I was excited to see that video last week or week and a half ago. Is actually very emotional for me that Facebook put out, right? And I don't know if you should definitely take a look at that, but they're committing, you know, they're committing to work from home, and they understand that people should be where they're inspired.
Right.
Right. So that was the whole kind of cadence of the video was you should live where you're inspired, and we support that. And that's why we're moving towards, you know, 50% of our workforce, you know, over the 10 years. I personally was a little, I understand Facebook has a massive workforce.
Yes.
I think 10 years is too long, but I was expecting, you know, much shorter, and I was expecting a more 80% of the workforce.
Well, 100% of the workforce is doing it right now.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, like,
they're there.
Right. And then I think the big, you know, one of the other takeaways here is, and let's hope that this is really not the case. And I sincerely hope so. But now that we know a global pandemic is possible, if something like this were to happen again and businesses were already set up to work remotely, it wouldn't have such an impact, right? And this is this goes for all business. This is, you know, I mean, as businesses move, like as brands and products move to more of a direct-to-consumer model, move away, you know, obviously there's been major shifts away from traditional media to digital, but as they go all in on digital, I mean, as they take 80%, 90%, potentially 100% of their budget on digital, that will radically shift, right, brick and mortar business. Like if you were to think of like a Target or, you know, Walmart just going 100% digital, right? If they did that, they would be Amazon right now.
I was just going to say that Sue right? did it already. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
So that's what leading from the future is.
There's an element of sadness in that, you know, and an element of excitement at the same time. It's like, it could be a really cool, way for businesses to function and prosper. And at the same time, I like going to Target. I like right. walking around the store and looking at stuff, you know? And I think people do have a, you know, an instinctive need to sort of interact and shop and look at things and touch things. And yeah, of course they, you know, I order lots of stuff on Amazon too, but that tactile thing and that in-person thing is, I think it's in our DNA to a large extent. And I think people enjoy it as an activity. I think it's a, you know, it's fun.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Like, so one of the things that's going to happen in, on that point in particular is there's going to be, you know, as they move towards these digital, more digital business models, they're going to essentially, you're going to see a lot more like AR kind of like VR experiences. So like, oh, for yeah. example, if you look up like Warby Parker, they're doing a phenomenal job. You know, you could try the glasses on right there on your iPhone.
Right.
Right. So yeah. there's going to be ways that people can interact, right, with, you know, through augmented reality and virtual reality. And those are already upticking, you know, the trends are already upticking. The question is like, what's after that? Yeah. You know, where's VR and AR going to go? Right. Like, so we'll just have to see, but all really exciting stuff. And, yeah.
Well, as we approach the singularity and become cybernetic organisms, I guess we'll find out.
Absolutely. Yes.
So I think on that note, we're going to wrap this up. This has been really fun, Seth. I'd love to do this again.
Thanks,
at some point.
Josh.
It's a great conversation.
I really appreciate it.
All right.
Absolutely.
I always forget to ask this, but where can people find you online?
Yeah, absolutely. So you can find me at sethsilver.com and socialcontrol.com.
That's great. Thanks again. Talk to you soon.
All right. Thanks, Josh.
Well, that's it for now. If you're new to working from home, you might want to check out worklifeathome.com, where you'll find articles, show notes, and best of all, a community where you can ask questions and get some answers from people who've been doing this a while. We'd love to see you there. And I would be thrilled to hear what you think and find out who else you'd like to hear from on the show. You can email me at josh@worklifeathome.com. If you're enjoying Work Life at Home, please do let your friends and coworkers know so they can subscribe. Thank you for listening. We'll be back soon.